Commerce Committee meeting will come to order. It's Tuesday, April 28th. The members present, I represent Furnace, Davidson, Ellis, and Donnelly. And the first matter on the agenda today is SJR 24, dealing with the priority access zone in the Unalaska for fishermen and processors. And the prime sponsor, Senator Sturgeluski, is with us today. Senator Sturgeluski, would you like to address the committee on this?
Fine. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I did put in SJR 24, the domestic fishery zone for Unalaska. Just a little bit of history. As you know, there's been a... he indicated both that you weren't going to be here. Would you like to sit
no,
here and
no,
I can
no,
leave?
You're supposed to be up testifying. So
right. No.
Would you like to have your packet?
Yeah, great.
In the last legislature, we had before us a real push for Americanization of the fisheries so that not only Alaskans but the United States in general could take advantage of the developing fisheries to westward and other parts of Alaska, and you've seen just basically an explosion going on. And one of the proposals that has been made is to that under the Magnuson Act that we go further in attempting to create domestic fisheries. And when we talk domestic, we're talking both Alaska and the United States. Of course, there's nothing that says that American processors would not be fully involved. And the first issue came off Shilikof Straits in the Kodiak area, and that's been a matter of contention. Then Paul Fuse, who has been, as you know, the mayor of Unalaska, very interested in fisheries, approached the North Pacific Fisheries Council, which has the authority to allocate the bottom fish and also to maintain the Magnuson Act, to talk about creating a domestic fishery zone around Unalaska, and that was the genesis of this resolution. And now before the North Pacific Fishery Council, by the way, Jim Campbell of Anchorage is the chairman of that, they will be looking at this issue on May 22nd, and there'll be a series of things they'll be looking at, this proposal and some modifications of it. But it seems to me that it's an excellent opportunity for us to get in and to see more, say, onshore processing done, to see that there would be a better chance to get supply of product to those onshore facilities. And I think it's a very positive thing to work toward this exclusive economic zone, and I would certainly be happy to respond to your questions. But I think it's a very positive thing for us.
Thank you, Senator Sturgeluski. Are there any questions for the prime sponsor? Are there any members of the public to testify on this piece of legislation? Seeing no additional testimony, what's the will of the committee? Representative Davidson?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would like to speak in support of this resolution. I think that if we are ever going to see full American utilization of our fisheries resources, then it's such things as supported by this resolution that we must realize. And we know that the fisheries is in fact changing. And I think that if we can show support to those people out in the trenches, if you will, trying to do something about their own economic demise, then I think this is a good place to start. So I'm going to be voting in support of this resolution.
Is there any further discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move this resolution out of the Magnuson Act.
Is there an objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, the motion passes. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I like the way you do business.
Thank you.
Only with our friends.
We're fast.
The next matter on the agenda is Senate Bill 88, sponsored by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee.
Mr. Chairman, can I bring that bill up for reconsideration at this time?
For reconsideration?
Reconsideration.
Well, I'm just kidding.
Whoops. I think the floor is going to spill over here.
You do that, and I start to speck water.
Okay, the next bill is Senate Bill 88. Is there anyone from the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee or their staff that wants to speak to this piece of legislation?
If I could just address that, I'm Mark Johnson, staff of the committee. We introduced the legislation at the request of some insurance companies, and I believe Donna Walker was the person who contacted us. I think she's here to testify.
Ms. Walker, did you want to testify, kick off on this, so to speak?
Good afternoon, Chairman Donnelly, members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee. I'm Donna Walker, and I'm addressing you today on behalf of my clients, State Farm and Allstate Insurance Companies. Senate Bill 88, which you have before you today, was introduced and passed by the House as House Bill 476 during the last legislative session. However, perhaps because this bill is so non-controversial and due in part to the many pressing issues facing the legislature at the end of last session, this bill remained in the Senate Rules Committee when the session ended. We are urging prompt consideration and passage of this bill during this legislative session. As non-controversial as it may be, it is significant and should be passed to clarify an ambiguity in AS 2136-420, which was passed by the legislature in 1984. AS 2136-420 was enacted to prevent erroneous or unfair premium increases in automobile insurance policies and to provide insureds with an appeal mechanism for such increases. Subsection D of that provision requires an insurer that increases the premium or adds a surcharge to an automobile insurance policy to give written notice of the increase or surcharge at least 15 days before it takes effect, stating the reason for the change and notifying the insured of his right of appeal. This is a laudable effort to safeguard against unfair or unauthorized increases, and one which we do not conceptually oppose. However, as the Division of Insurance has pointed out in their position paper, this provision was intended to apply only to those instances where a premium increase results from an accident or traffic violation, and not in other instances. But the statute is deficient as it provides no exceptions to this rule, and yet there are legitimate exceptions that need to be addressed. The exceptions provided by Senate Bill 88 are greatly needed in order to reflect practical as well as legal realities. If this subsection is read literally, it would require an insurer to send an insured a statement of reasons for changing premiums and a statement of the notice of right to appeal every time, without exception, the premium is increased, regardless of the reason for the increase. This requirement would significantly affect the way insurance business is presently transacted. For example, when a general rate increase is approved by the Division of Insurance, our insureds receive at least 15 days notice of this increase and a brief explanation of the reasons for the increase. This subsection is now on the books, would require the insurer to then present a statement to the insureds telling them that they have a statutory right to appeal a premium increase already approved by the Division of Insurance. This statement would serve no purpose and, in fact, would have no meaning because the division has already approved the increase. In fact, it would be illegal for us to charge anything but the approved rate. To suggest to the insured that he has a right of appeal not only is misleading, but could generate wasteful litigation and or administrative hearings. A second and perhaps more practical problem encountered is when an insured requests a youthful driver be added to his policy or where he has purchased a new car. To follow the literal dictates of the present statute, we simply would not be able to accept coverage in either instance until at least 15 days after the request was made in order to assure that our insured has been informed of his statutory right of appeal. The same would be true where an insured moves to a higher rated area. We would not be able to accept coverage unless our insured is able to contact us early enough so we can provide 15-day notice of increase and right of appeal. In these instances, the insureds want immediate coverage, and they know that it will increase their premiums. Yet the statute would prevent the rate increase and thereby prevent the coverage until the requisite notice is given. We do not believe it was ever intended that AS 2136-420 would have this effect. Senate Bill 88 would correct this ambiguity. Senate Bill 88 would require written notice of the increase stating the reason for the change and the right of appeal in all instances except one, where a premium increase results from a change requested by an insured if the insured is notified at the time of the request that his or her premium will increase, and two, a rate increase approved by the director if the insurer gives written notice to the insured of the rate increase at least 15 days before the expiration date of the affected policy, which is when the increase would, of course, take effect. These changes would not affect the original intent which prompted the enactment of the statute. Rather, SB 88 would rectify ambiguities and make the statute more reflective of practical and legal realities. This is SB 88's third year in the legislature. No one has ever testified against it or otherwise opposed it. It simply seems to get buried because it is so non-controversial. We urge that not happen again this year. State Farm and Allstate have expended much time, effort, and money in their earnest attempts to correct the statutory ambiguity. No one stands to lose by passage of SB 88. It benefits everyone. The insurers benefit by not having to send out meaningless, misleading notices. The state benefits by not getting wrapped up in unnecessary futile appeals and administrative hearings. And perhaps most importantly for your concerns, the consumer benefits by being able to get immediate coverage in those situations where it is requested without having to wait after statutory notice period. SB 88 still has a House Judiciary Committee referral with only days remaining in the session. Therefore, we respectfully urge favorable consideration and prompt passage of SB 88. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Walker. Are there questions of the witness? Could you just stay with us for a minute? I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representatives Kopelman, Boucher, and who else came in? Representative Menard? I think I need to put you on the record, too. Okay, thank you. Ms. Walker, we passed out earlier House Bill 46, the so-called omnibus insurance bill, and it looks to me like the 15-day notice requirement in this piece of legislation would conflict with the legislation that just came out of Judiciary, which was a 20-day notice, I think. Are you familiar with that?
But it's not a 20-day notice of increase in premiums. There's been a 20-day notice provision of for other types of notices.
For any increase above 10%, there's a 20-day notice provision.
Do you have any problems with making the two bills consistent?
No.
Okay. That was my only question. Thank you. Are there any other questions? Are there any other members of the public that wish to testify on Senate Bill 88? Seeing no other testimony, so for discussion, Representative Copeland.
I would move that we amend Senate Bill 88, written in Commerce, to on line 12 to page 1, to strike 15 and 20.
Would that also be on line 20?
That's correct, unless you want to specifically say that we're only talking here about increases that are greater than 10%. I talked to Mr. Cope before we heard the bill this afternoon, and he said that it would be easier for the division if we did do 20 days, just because it would make it consistent across the board. But 46, that only applies to increases above 10%.
President Boucher.
I want to say 15 more days notice before it takes effect. What type of notice are you talking about? Does that cover some place and I'm not looking? I mean, does that require a certified letter?
I don't think it does. Ms. Walker, the question is, the notice provisions under existing statute, do they require any special form of notice, or is it simply just a letter, normal postage?
It's just regular mail.
I think that's
however,
correct.
In 46, right. It's going to make everything uniform.
Yeah. In 46, House Bill 46, which is just passed out of the House Judiciary Committee, there is some additional requirements for certain types of cancel. I thought that only applied to cancellation, though.
It will apply to all notices. That's what I thought. Oh. Proof of mailing.
We just standardize it. It requires that any notice that you mail out has to be done in a certain way so that there's records to establish that the notice went out. And that's in 46.
So that's not covered by this, but this would fit into that and it would apply to this also.
Okay, I just want to make sure that the person's got a chance to sign that.
Well, I don't know.
That section, the particularly onerous part of House Bill 46 that requires that you have to notify someone that they sign, that they receive the notice, that section deals with notice of cancellation. This bill is only dealing with an increase that is either a result of something that the insured asks for and they were told at the time that their policy would increase. So there's no surprises, or a case where it's been a prior approval by the Division of Insurance of a rate increase. So in either case, there's notification, and the person is aware at the time that the rate increases that it's going to increase, and then in addition to that, they receive a notification in the mail reminding them that it's going to increase. So it's not as onerous a requirement as it's possible for a system when you're talking about canceling someone's insurance.
Yeah, but the consumer's protected here.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Representative Kopelman? I believe your motion is still on the floor, right? To amend? Is there any further discussion on the proposed amendment? Is there any objection to the proposed amendment? Seeing no objection, the amendment's adopted. Representative Kopelman?
For further discussion, I move the House Committee substitute the Senate Bill 88.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the motion passes. Thank you. And after the next matter on the agenda is Senate Bill 64, the Export Authority under ADA. If people can stick around, this might take a while. After we get done with ADA, there's a couple of matters that I want to discuss with the committee regarding potential committee legislation, including Representative Furness has a suggested piece of committee legislation for us to talk about.
For 64?
Yeah, right now we're on Senate Bill 64.
No,
after we're done with this, I just wanted to make sure you all knew that we were going to be talking about proposed committee legislation once we're done with this ADA. Walt had a bill that he wants us to consider.
Okay, because I've got lots of questions on 64.
Right.
Do you think we're going to be done with it?
Well, if when we finish for the day, okay? Okay, guys.
I mean, I'm just noticing how it moved in the original bill as it moved up to the Senate there.
I particularly want to talk to some of the people on the Senate side.
Okay. Well, let's take a look and see who's here. I only have two people signed up to testify on Senate Bill 64, Becky Baer from the Department of Commerce and Commissioner Smith. Is there a representative from the prime sponsor here today?
I'm representing a prime.
Would you like to address?
Not really. We're going to defer to the commissioner and the department. They can probably answer most of your questions.
All right. Commissioner Smith, Ms. Baer, did you want to join us and talk to the committee about this bill?
Certainly.
Please.
Thank you. Chairman, members of the committee, I believe that Becky has given everybody an analysis of Senate Bill 64.
I don't have an analysis, Chairman. I've got
it looks like this.
No.
On the yellow pad under your bill file. Here. Did we just get this? Wait, here they are. Well, here they are. Let's pass them out.
Oh, you got one?
And this guy delivered. For John. Here we go. Here. Cook, did you get one? Yeah, he did.
Not an idea.
Okay. Cook, could you hand me this?
Okay.
Now we're armed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to ask, I didn't know how long people had this, and ask whether the committee wanted me to go through it, but I will. that we should proceed. Senate Bill 64 is one of the key cornerstones of our economic development effort. The administration, as this committee knows, began discussing the need to enact this kind of legislation early in the game. It's been in the Senate and moved through the Senate after numerous hearings. I think all very positive vein. The legislation has three principal objectives. One is to create an export financing program. A major focus of the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. It was previously the Alaska Industrial Development Authority, and the name has been changed to reflect the important additional function of the Export Authority. The second prong of the bill is to provide a secondary market which will allow small business enterprises in the state of Alaska to obtain financing. This was identified by the administration as a real problem in the state of Alaska, and I believe in my discussions with the members of this committee at various times that I would say all of you had expressed the same concern at one time or another. Lastly, the bill provides a mechanism for infrastructure development in certain cases without financial risk to the state of Alaska. I'd point out that the bill, as it went through the Senate in the equity area, was amended so that any equity participation, as the bill is now, as the bill was passed out of the Senate, would require the administration and ADA to come back to the legislature. In those instances, where the state would take any kind of equity position, so that the other areas are dead areas where you have a real check on any loan. It's either originated by a bank that's taken a substantial portion of the loan, which is the case in the small business enterprise situations, or you have, if you're going to the tax exempt market or the taxable market, you have the additional review of whoever's underwriting the issuance. And it's our belief that is a substantial check, and that the state does not take in this bill a financial risk, except in those equity situations, and those would each be brought to the committee, as was the case with the one equity project the state did undertake, and that was the Red Dog Mine project. And the way this is set up, that we would not have the authority to do equity interest without the legislature. Now, what I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, if it's acceptable to the committee, is go through the section by section analysis, and I'll try to spend the time on those sections that I think are of a more substantive nature. Section 1 sets off the legislative findings and policy, and it emphasizes the export of small business enterprises and inserts 4 new paragraphs of findings relating to the importance to the state's economy of expanding and facilitating financing for export businesses in Alaska.
Excuse me, Commissioner Smith?
Yes.
Representative Boucher has a question.
Yes, sir.
I don't want to interrupt you, Tony. Give me some examples of small businesses that would benefit from this.
Representative Boucher, there are a number of different kinds of small businesses. For instance, you've been very concerned about the manufacturing, the 1800s small manufacturing businesses, the person who makes the airplanes. What the ADA bill would allow is if that individual went to one of the financial institutions, and the financial institution was of the opinion that in fact it's a viable business, the person was unable to get financing elsewhere, that if the financing institution were to pick up 25% of, say they needed $100,000 to do a plant expansion or something of this nature, and the bank picked up $25,000, ADA would have the ability, and as this bill constitutes, to, in the secondary market, pick up the other $75,000. Any losses would be shared pro rata, so that it's not a situation where the state is in a position where the bank that initiated or originated the loan would be protected, and the state would be left holding the bag. Our concern was that we have the originator have a big enough stake that they take their origination seriously, number one, and number two, to ensure that we go up and down together, so to speak. The other thing that the bill does is it allows in the usury area, Red, that you can have a kicker in one of those small business enterprises, because very often there is a fairly substantial risk in any small business situation, and so that we provide in the bill that there can be what they call in the trade a kicker. That means that there could be more than the usury law might allow in that particular situation. That is not, by the way, a major change. It's an issue that we took up on the Senate side. It's not a major change. In fact, there is an opinion of the Comptroller General that would allow this type of what they call a kicker to be included in loans with banks are tend to be very conservative about it. And so what we do is we go in that particular enterprise fund, we allow kickers to take place. I guess your guy who builds the Arctic Tern might very well turn to this particular to ADA for if he wanted to expand his plan or do something of that nature, right, on a small business basis. Mm-hmm. Also, in the tourism industry, there are examples there. The bill does not try to pick out specific industries. What it does is it tries to set up a vehicle within ADA that remedies a real problem in the market, in the capital marketplace. And we try to do it in a manner that ensures that ADA will meet the five C's of banking, that it will be, everything will be done on a creditworthy basis, and that we're not getting the state into a risk capital situation. We have other initiatives dealing with venture capital that are outside of ADA. As we see this bill, that is not a function of the bill to provide venture capital. We've got some linkage programs, and we've got some things that we're working on in banking and securities that would deal with that side of the equation. This is going to allow, as we see it, there to be a secondary source of money for developmental projects and for small business projects. So I hope I'm responsive to your question.
Do you through the chair, and then because I know there's a lot to cover. Do you have any people online now that are waiting for this legislation to pass that are interested in taking advantage of it?
I've been told that there are a number of people and companies that are interested in the legislation and are waiting for it to pass. I have looked at the problem in a generic sense and not in an individual sense. And so we have not made any effort to identify specific people out there who have projects that they feel are ripe for consideration. Now, I don't know whether Bert Wagner is the executive director of ADA, and I would have had Bert here, but he was back. He's back in New York today meeting with the rating agencies. I don't know whether Bert has been specifically contacted as a result of the publicity that has surrounded the movement of the bill. He may have.
If I could offer, Mr. Chairman, Representative Boucher, our office has been contacted by several businesses in the last 3 months expressing interest in the bill. So whether or not they qualify, that's another issue. But we have been contacted by specific businesses, yes.
Is that okay, Liz?
Thank you, sir.
Do you have any additional questions at this time for the commissioner?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry. I was interrupted. Commissioner?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Turning to Section 2, adds a new subsection in the findings and policies section. And the new subsection finds it to be a policy of the state and the public purpose to provide financial support and cooperation with federal, state, and private institutions to increase the export of Alaska goods, entrepreneurial talent, raw materials, and services. Section 3 creates a new statutory section. This new statutory section creates the ADA revolving fund. The intent is to create a single fund in which all ADA's assets will be deposited. Within the revolving fund will be the economic development account, the enterprise development account, and a number of other accounts. There are provisions later in the legislation defining ADA's ability to use assets of the various accounts. The revolving fund is created as a revolving fund, so the payments on loans purchased or held by ADA in the fund can remain and be used for ADA's purposes without necessitating an annual legislative appropriation. Section 4 relates to the statement of ADA's purposes and contains provisions substantially similar to those described with respect to Section 1. So, that is, it adds reference to export and small business enterprises in connection to ADA's purposes, and it adds new paragraphs which contain statements of ADA's purpose with respect to exporting transactions, such as to foster the expansion of Alaska's exports, to cooperate with other organizations for that purposes, to provide a source of guarantees, and so on. This amendment also, in paragraph 2 on page 5 of the legislation, provides a reference to the statute which specifies the types of projects in which ADA may take an ownership interest. Section 5 amends ADA's general powers by inserting language to clarify the power to issue bonds includes the power to incur debt generally. 6 amends the general powers section to add new powers relating to financing and assisting export transactions, including the power to participate with other programs pertaining to the exportation of Alaska goods, services, or raw materials, and the power to provide export finance training to the staff, the power to coordinate with various federal programs, and the power to guarantee loans to qualified exporters. This section also adds to the general statement of ADA's powers, the power to provide financing assistance for small business enterprises. I note that Representative Davison has the, I had sent over the Ex-Im Bank folder and brochure, and I, if any members of the committee would like to take a look at that, and there's some pamphlets in that, explains, for instance, right now there are no banks that are tied into the Ex-Im Bank. In the state. Largely, I think, because of an unwillingness to get up to speed on it, so to speak, more than, because it's an excellent program, but what we're talking about is the language to, and the authority for ADA to, in fact, tie into that. You have insurance programs for commercial risk and for stability risks and things of that nature, make it a very good program. Section 7 amends ADA's administrative procedures, statutory section. This amendment's a new technical cleanup matter. It's basically cleaning up the bill as we go along. Section 8 repeals and reenacts AS 4488.05C. This part of ADA's statute is intended to establish a procedure for the adoption by ADA of its regulations. The current provisions of AS 4488.05C includes both a general power to adopt regulations and an express duty to adopt regulations with respect to certain matters. In Section 12 of the legislation, additional matters are set forth with respect to which ADA will have an express duty to adopt regulations. The repeal and reenactment of AS 4488.085C in this section of legislation is necessary to preserve the general power to adopt regulations while also moving the statement of matters as to which ADA must adopt regulations to the same part of the statutes of those matters mentioned in Section 12. Basically, cleaning things up, streamlining, and make sure that we know what we have to do. Section 9, again, makes the same changes to 0.085D as those made in 085A under Section 7, which we previously discussed. Section 10, a similar situation. Section 11, same. Section 12 creates a new subsection G, AS 4488085. This new subsection contains those matters referred to in conjunction with Section 8 above as to which ADA must adopt regulations under the current provision of AS 4488085C. Section 12 also creates a new Section H. Subsection H directs ADA to adopt certain regulations in connection with its program for encouraging the export of Alaska goods, services, and raw materials. These regulations must establish criteria for the eligibility of exporters under the program, set forth equity and collateral requirements, and include other matters. There is a lot, Mr. Chairman, of guidelines for establishing these regulations. For instance, in other countries and in the Foreign Trade Area and Department of Commerce and the Trade Administration, they're new to export criteria, a number of different criteria that we can look to when we're establishing and promulgating the regulations for ADA. We aren't reinventing the wheel. There are also a number of states that have, in the recent past, established authorities much like this. And we do have, I believe, some within the confines of the authority, which you as the legislature will give ADA. A lot of criteria to follow. The Section 13 amends ADA's statutory section pertaining to the issuance of bonds. The changes made to AS 4488090A by this section are intended to set forth clearly that ADA's bond issuance powers also extend to the issuance of bonds for ADA's developmental project financing. The term development project is defined later in the legislation and contemplates those projects which ADA may take an ownership interest. Again, as I stated early in my testimony, only time that ADIF would be able to take a ownership interest as a result of the amendments made in the Senate. The Senate passed bill would be when it was brought to the legislature. So you would get to pass on each one of those projects. Section 14 repeals and reenacts AS 4488-09-OE. The reason for the repeal and the reenactment is to reorganize the subsection into a clearer form. Otherwise, the changes are only for the purpose of making it clear that ADIF's bond issuing power extends to its export financing program and developmental project program, as stated above. Section 15 is the same amendment as described in Section 14. Section 16, these are just different sections and tracks Section 14. Section 17 amends the statutory section authorizing ADIF to enter into agreements with trustees. Again, the changes are intended to make clear that ADIF's power to enter into agreements with trustees applies to its programs for export development project financing. That's just to make sure that the entire package of the bill conforms. Section 18 amends ADIF's Capital Reserve Fund statute. The Capital Reserve Fund created in AS 4488-105 can be used by ADIF to secure its bonds, but there are some limitations on that use. One of the limitations is the requirement in AS 4488-105F that at least 20% of the principal amount of a loan be retained by the originating institution. The amendment makes it clear that this limitation applies to bonds under the export program, so that the export program is in the same posture as the president has. Section 19 amends the statute that contains the state's pledge not to limit or alter ADIF's power to fulfill contracts it enters into with bondholders and federal agencies. The amendment makes it clear that this pledge applies also with respect to export development project financing. There are also some minor drafting style changes.
I was wondering why this was taking so long over in the Senate. It's starting to become clear.
That's why I wish we had had this early enough so we didn't have. If you want, Mr. Chairman, I can continue to go on this section by section. No, I can do that, or I can just answer questions. It's whatever's the pleasure of the chair.
Well, I'll leave it up to the committee. This is probably a useful process. Do you want to continue with the commissioner, go all the way through, and then come back for questions? Or? Okay. Why don't we?
What I'll do is I will, I think it's all right with the committee. We don't have to go through each one, whether the fund into an account. Section 20, I think, is an important one. It amends the statute exempt ADIF property from local taxation, and then it clears. For clarification purposes, the intent to make clear that the provisions of the statute apply also to developmental projects. The amendment contains a few minor drafting style corrections. Provisions have been made for ADIF to report annually to the governor and the legislature the extent of holdings the authority has, which are tax exempt. So that you'll know where things stand. The enterprise section 21 amends the statutory section which creates the Enterprise Development Fund. The amendment turns the fund into an account, and the accounts were earlier I talked about the way we have combined the what were formerly a couple of funds into a fund with separate accounts. Section 22, Section 26 amends AS 4488-155F to reflect the change described in Section 21. This amendment also adds language at the end of that subsection to make it clear that ADIF may pledge assets of the Enterprise Development Account only to secure bonds issued to the financing of projects, a term which is defined in AS 4488-220. Accordingly, bonds issued for the financing of development projects and exporting transactions cannot be secured by pledges of the assets of the Enterprise Development Account. Section 27, again, we're dealing with the separation between the accounts and fund. Section 28 amends the statute that creates ADIF's loan insurance account. The amendment takes the loan insurance account out of the Enterprise Development Fund and puts it in the revolving fund. The amendment also limits the application of the loan insurance amount to financing of projects under AS 4488-155. 29 is to conform. 30 reflect the changes described in Section 29. 31 reflect the changes in 29. Section 32 amends the Small Business enterprise. Loan account statute. Assert the phrase small business enterprise in place of small enterprise and takes the account out of the enterprise development fund and puts it in a revolving fund for the internal workings of ADEN so that you have your fund and then a separate account. Section 33 amends 4488.158B to reflect the changes made in Section 32. The amendment in this section also permits ADEN to purchase or participate in the purchase of loans to small business enterprises without being limited to purchasing only the portion guaranteed by the federal government. However, with respect to language in AS 4488.158B relating to the purchase of those guaranteed portions, the amendment in this section adds a permission to ADEN to purchase the guaranteed portion of a loan made to pay the cost of exporting transactions for small business enterprises. The amendment also contains some minor drafting changes. Section 34 amends the statutory section, sets a formula for how ADEN must determine interest rates on loans and purchases. The amendment makes it clear that this applies only to projects purchased under the specific statutory authority contained in 155 to 159, and that's projects purchased with assets of the enterprise development account. And that's just basically keeping separate accounts straight. Section 35 makes the same change with respect to the Economic Development Fund as Section 32 makes with respect to the Enterprise Development Fund, and that turns it into an account of a revolving fund. The amendment makes it clear that the Economic Development account may be used only for the financing of developmental projects, a term which is defined in the bill. The economic development account is a source of financing for projects ADA expects to own or operate. The amendment includes language which prohibits the pledge of assets in the enterprise development account in connection with the financing of development projects, and two, directs ADA to make the financing assistance offered under the economic development account in the form of a loan to the maximum extent possible. Section 36 requires ADA to obtain legislative approval for issuance of bonds for the acquisition, financing, or operation of a development project. Without, that's anyone, irrespective of the amount. 37, Section 37 amends the statute, provides for certain exemptions from the operation of other statutes, and this has to do really with our guarantee program. Section 38 stipulates the authority may not charge a penalty for prepayment of a loan after 5 years from the inception of the loan. That provision came out of the Senate because of bond sales 2-8 prepayment, and this particular change was a concern on the part of the Senate that those people who had ADA bonds in sales 2-8 were unable to refinance to reflect present rates, where if you had had an ADA project under bond sale 1, you could, for instance. And it was Mr. Wagon's calculation that the total cost of prepayment penalties would be about $5 million. If, depending on how many people came in to refinance it, that was the exposure that we saw to ADA. 39 defines authority as, it also, by the way, Mr. Chairman, says in the future that we'll always that we won't lock people in the same way that happened in those two sales, which was partly Section 39 defines the authority as the Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority. Section 40 amends the definition section of the ADA statutes, new definitions for development project and revolving fund. Development project definition includes those facilities described in paragraph A1 of the definition of project under ADA's current statutes. The intent is to define development projects to include the basic resource development infrastructure types of projects. Definition of revolving fund refers to the revolving fund that I discussed in Section 3 with the separate accounts. 41 relates to export assistance. Under AS 4488-300, ADA would work with financial institutions to determine which exporting transactions qualify for ADA assistance. The ADA assistance would be provided in the form of a guarantee of a loan for the exporting transaction. Under 4488.310, the transaction would qualify only if it has some significant contact with or benefit to the state of Alaska. That contact or benefit, generally speaking, have to be in the form of a minimum 20% of the transaction resulting in the sale of a with Alaska Materials Abroad, the rendering of services abroad by Alaska Business and providing similar benefits. In other words, the idea is to see some economic development happen in the state of Alaska. Under AS 4480-320-88 to guarantee up to 90% of a loan made to finance a transaction, a qualifying transaction, data would first have to find the guarantee is reasonably necessary to stimulate or facilitate the making of the loan. Under 330, the financing institution involved in the transaction would be required to make the first credit investigation. And under 3408, it would be required to keep confidential the information. 350 provides that ADA may establish fees by regulations to cover the costs of the export program. Under 360, a guarantee issued by ADA for an export transaction would guarantee against political or commercial loss, principal and interest on an eligible export transaction. 370 will make it clear that the guarantee does not constitute a general obligation of the state. 380 would shield officers and employees and agents of ADA from personal liability in connection with guarantee ADA issues. And 390, the guarantee could be secured by an export insurance account into which ADA could deposit bond proceeds issued for the purpose as well as other amounts. Section 42 directs the revision of statutes to change the name throughout, and Section 43 repeals subsection C of the statutory section. The repealer cleans up some outdated language and facilitates the financing of small business enterprises. 42 also repeals the requirement for legislative approval of each project. That and Section 44 and Section 44. Section, there's some Becky points out, and that's true. The bill retains the requirement for legislative approval of projects over $50 million, but that's been deleted. And Section 44 provides an immediate effective date. And that's, I must admit, Mr. Chairman, it wasn't until I left the practice of law to become commissioner that I realized how terribly boring it is to hear the leaf. to think that all those years I was on the other side of the but they yes, sir.
Lots of questions here. Is there a company?
A couple of things occurred to me. I got several pages. Just on the first page, on page two, part nine there, where you add export and small business, which is what strikes me is that we keep adding little phrases defining the kinds of activities. And essentially, what ADA is created for, it would seem to me, is to provide capital for any sort of entrepreneurial activity that creates wealth. And I'm sure there are people out there who can think of ways to do it that you and I haven't even got a glimpse of. I mean, I don't know, silicon chip manufacturer or something isn't covered by this. So it may not be simpler to, can't we simplify it instead of expanding it with adding a few more phrases, because we can think of 40 more, make it even longer. Yes. But maybe if we just say, something governing, essentially defining it as the general kind of activity rather than each specific one that we do.
Actually, when we first started out, we pulled a lot of definitions in from some analysis done by the Conference of State Planning Agencies and a lot of other similar types of authorities, and we weeded some of those out. Of the Senate, what we wanted to do was to make sure that in the intent language that we focused ADA and its authority towards broadening its base as a source of, particularly in the secondary market, of capital. And that's why we did it. In the past, ADA ended up in a situation that, as Mr. Wagner once said, you asked me to do office warehouses, and I did a very effective job doing office warehouses. So one of the things that the administration was really concerned about was to broaden ADA's focus out so that, in fact, it was able to and would, in fact, get involved in the types of things we're talking about. My concern is that when you define, when you, in your intent language, when you direct an
agency in a certain way, the agencies tend to follow that. We tried to avoid picking specific industries, but one time we were talking about entrepreneurial, and that was deleted because it was felt that the small business and the other language was in it that we did include it was adequate to direct data in the right direction. That's why we did it.
One more question for the investment in the ownership interest in projects. I hate to say it, but it sounds like you're recreating art.
That was a real concern, and that is why on the Senate side, there is the authority to do equity investments. It's only if you come back to the legislature. There is no authority because of the ARC situation. There is no authority for ADA to, on its own, do equity ownership projects unless it brings that particular project to the legislature. I would like to, on the ARC side, Icicle Seafoods is in business today because of ARC. For all of the excesses that we all know all too well, I would also like to point out that there have been some successes in the state with that kind of situation. And Icicle is one that pops to mind. Former Petersburg processors, and Icicle would have been out of business rather than one of our major Alaska seafood companies were it not for ARC. So I think it's a question of the selection of what always is. Yeah.
I have 40 more questions about working here.
Okay. I represent Boucher and Representative Ellis.
Well, I got a question that just came out of our caucus this morning. Is this something that our Constitution requires that you do? And we're whacking and cutting every place. And what's the overall cost of the program?
We're not asking for there to be no general fund cost.
It doesn't cost anything to run this thing.
Yeah, it runs. It's the cost. Representative Boucher have already been incurred with ADA. We're not looking
I'm talking about the whole program.
Do you have a
fiscal I think one of the points is the foregone revenue with the tax exempt status for some of the larger development projects. The infrastructure, they're going to have to pick up that. The cost of roads or public services are going to have to be picked up by the locality and state for the big projects.
I think part of the what ADA was created and has, at least in my view, done an awful lot of good things in this state. One of the major problems in this state is that there is no secondary market. Particularly now. I talked about the ADA bill to the banking industry, and they were all very positive about what ADA was doing. What we're doing is with ADA. For instance, port projects, Red, are still eligible for tax exempt money. Under the new tax law, there are ADA is a vehicle through which the state can access capital sources, and it, at least in my view, assumes that there is a real benefit in the state to private sector economic activity, that in fact private sector economic activity is one of the valid public policy directions that the state should take, and that the only activity isn't necessarily receiving money in the state government and then dispensing it. We have in ADA a situation where we have access to capital markets. We do it and do it well. It is a AA-minus rated institution. It has a history of being well run, and the cost of ADA and the cost of this program are internally financed through good underwriting standards, believe that is a real benefit if we're going to do economic development in the state of Alaska and have have the people of Alaska be able to participate in a viable private sector company.
Okay, well, we talk about creating secondary markets, you know. I'm just, I'm wondering, just in taking a look at it, you know, are we really in a competitive position to create secondary markets? It's much the same as a gas pipeline. You know, don't these forces tend to drive themselves? In other words, we put all this together, and what product do you envision we're going to end up selling? I mean, this thing it sounds great, you know. I usually vote for things that sound great. But God, I got 280 people that in the last thing it says, cut government, cut government, cut government. You know, no taxes. And so I'm looking at everything.
But this isn't a question, Representative Boucher, of a government bureaucracy. ADA has 13 employees and has been, I think, a real success. We're talking.
I'm not saying it hasn't. I'm not aware of it. Okay. It's just a buzzword to me. So this time I want to know more about it.
Sure.
If it's going to create jobs and I can see the cash flow, like in the next 24 months or so, and that appears to be a crisis period, then I'm all for it. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
The way we developed this was when we first started, we had ADA reached a point where it was really primarily involved in office buildings and office warehouses in the urban areas. And when I joined the administration, I asked Dick Wenahan at the Department of Commerce, Office of International Trade, to go out in the embassy, go out through the commercial attaches, and pull together all the vehicles that had been used successfully from Denmark to Finland, West Germany, to Japan, Korea, to, in fact, deal with the same kinds of problems that we are experiencing in the private sector. And it turned out that we had a vehicle that was here and poised and ready to go. In addition, we went to all the states to find out, Illinois was one of the principal models, but to find out what they were doing about export financing. We pulled together all of this information in one pile, and there was a real similarity in all of those programs that worked. And that's what we built into this program.
I don't think we need to be convinced necessarily of the idea. What we want to know is that, you know, the particular proposal will work to the end that you're discussing. I mean, you're quite right. I remember that ADA at one point single-handedly to create a 13% vacancy rate in office space in Anchorage by their lending policy. So that's what I wonder about.
And were they not the ones going to build that state office building too?
No, I mean, it is a question of whether we're directing them too tightly into some areas or whether we can be, make this really work. And that's the main thing that we, you know. That
I know say, whoever it was, I just want to see that we don't create a vehicle to do that.
Mr. Chairman, I'm an expert. First of all, ADA in the export area, for instance, guarantees certain things, actually the guarantor, increases the comfort level, or acts in the secondary one. And one of the things that we have not done with the ADA legislation is to put ADA in the position of being the initiator. And that's where I certainly share your concerns that often those people who are insulated from the risks of the marketplace aren't the best people to make decisions on where things ought to go. But on the other hand, I remember discussing this with a group of bankers, and as we were preparing the bill and as it was moving through the Senate, and we had, afterwards, uniformly people were coming up and saying, we need this kind of thing, because we can't get
that kind of capital into the market. We just can't get it.
What sort of policy steering are you going to have to prevent, you know, over investment, say in apartment building, you know, department stores or for example, in the mid '60s, the old agricultural revolving loan fund destroyed the dairy industry in the north because everybody could come up with a convincing reason why a dairy processing plant would be profitable, and so the revolving loan fund gave out loans for four separate and distinct processing plants, any one of which would have used needed three times as many cows as there were in the valley just to operate, throughout the day. They blew the fund, and of course they.
That's why our focus is on the secondary market and the originating bank. I have great confidence that Dan Cuddy is not going to put $25,000 in. It's a $100,000 investment in a dairy in the valley. Cuddy's willing to put $25,000 into it and risk that loss. We're going to have to do good underwriting standards on top of it.
Because you are hung on a point here, because theoretically you shouldn't be favoring one borrower over another.
That's right.
That's a competitive situation. Nevertheless, if you're going to be properly hard-nosed about economic development, the state is going to somewhere have to make priorities and say, you know, not that you're going to just invest in a certain type of development, but you are going to decide that there's only one large, I don't know, bean factory or whatever, jelly bean factory going to, rather than letting eight jelly bean factories be built in Anchorage. And probably that means then deciding which one of the proposals is the best one rather than, and that, so I mean, are you going to set that kind of sharp, rather limit the action, and that's an administrative job, of the agency, so that rather than taking the easy way out and giving everybody their loan, they say, okay, we'll send the best one for X number of dollars.
The intent in this statute, the way it's drafted, is that this everything be based on a creditworthy basis. And I can assure you that ADA's present underwriting standards, which I'm very familiar with because of some of my other activities, have been excellent. That ADA has not underwritten a bunch of the weaker.
I'm not talking about weaker. They can be equally strong. Any one of those dairy plants in the Chino Valley in the 60s would have stood. Their figures were all good. The problem was financing all of them. They became competitive with one another, and the capital was misdirected.
And we cannot do that.
We can't.
I absolutely agree.
I just want to know what's the mechanism that prevents that.
And the first mechanism is that you have the originating bank, and so that has so that there is at that level a very fine pencil put to any proposal that's brought forward. Then ADA's
looking at the performance of the last three banks who has picked up really
quickly. I think that's one that I'll have to decline the comment on my other hat. But I'm just saying that's the first question. Then you have the underwriting standards of ADA, and we are going to have to flesh out a great deal of that in the regulations. I think that there's no question about that. But what this bill does is it focuses the ADA's requirement on those types of activities that are creditworthy. And plus, we're talking, generally speaking, in this bill, of going to the market. And that requires when you go to the market, you do an underwriting, you have bond covenants and other requirements on the authority that precludes the administration of that authority from just giving away money. That's one of the advantages of going to the market is you do have that second look and you do have those bond covenants that you didn't have in the ag revolving loan situation, for instance.
Representative Ellison. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I have a concern in Section 42 for your eliminating multifamily housing loan account. I had some, I understand why that account was created and why this is probably time to do away with it, so I'm not arguing about that, but I had, during the last two sessions, some experience with that fund. I know some monies were taken from that fund to for a pulp mill at Sitka, and I'm wondering if there are funds remaining there, what's to become of those. I found a use for some of those monies as well. So I'm not arguing over particular uses, but wondering if there are any remaining monies and where those are going, and just where we stand with that account.
When I thought I would have to have Mr. Wagon give you an exact figure up to date on that account. There was some money in that account, but not a great deal, but it also was rolling into the funds, the revolving fund. But the Sitka guarantee, I believe it, my memory, I want to be accurate. Mr. Wagner works with these figures every day, and I don't. But as I recall, most of that account was used up with the Sitka.
Okay. Could I request through you then a report from Bert about exactly what happened with the Sitka pulp mill loan guarantee, and then the other monies? There was an accommodation worked out that year. If the monies, Senator, as I understand it, Senator Rohde is the person who established in statute the multifamily housing loan fund when that was a problem in South Central Alaska a number of years ago, and that fund was initially capitalized. The loan guarantee was made for the pulp mill in Sitka. Representative Claxton secured a portion of those monies, I believe it was about $1.2 million, for the Anchorage Neighborhood Housing Services. We sort of, our rationale was that the monies were there for housing and Anchorage Neighborhood Housing and the rehabilitation of neighborhoods in Anchorage. That was an appropriate use for a portion of those monies. So we reached an accommodation that year. I'm wondering if any, the repeal of the multifamily statutory section would impact what's going on with Sitka or with Anchorage Neighborhood Housing Services. That's a big concern. So if Bert could report to us, I'd appreciate that.
I'd be glad to have Bert do that, Representative Ellis.
And then if there are remaining funds, what's to become of those?
We specifically the statute is drawn so it does not impact the neighborhood housing project nor the Sitka. So that those, neither of those programs are impacted. However, what the balance of that fund is, I will have Mr. Wagon provide that answer. That's not something I know.
Thank you very much.
Representative Davidson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think at least we judge our institutions too harshly. We should try to focus on some perspective here. I think that in the last 5 to 6 years that we've tried hard as a state to think of, for want of a better term, dollar spending devices or mechanisms. I think that perhaps there wasn't the market scrutiny or the underwriting scrutiny that would normally be demanded in times of lesser money, but certainly those times are here. And I think that to speak to this effort to expand the opportunities that such a vehicle can afford us in Alaska today, I think is a good thing. And I'm going to support this legislation because I think that we will be, in fact, more careful. And I think that, as the commissioner has indicated, there's nothing wrong with the vehicle itself. In fact, in some instances, it was over-successful. But I think to keep in mind the fact that we're looking at international opportunities and creating economic potential, we've got to have this kind of vehicle to assist us. And I think the modern world tells us that we're not going to do it on private capital alone. So, while I don't have a question at this point, I do think that it's good to put our focus in a more long-term perspective and try to see the advantages that we can gain.
Representative
Dodson. Well, I'm quite by sharing your concern as a vehicle. I just want to make sure that, you know, when you say economic development, I've got everybody's for economic development. How could you possibly?
All the pom poms are both coming up.
I see that there's been a long track record back in Washington, Senator Murkowski's office. You know, in fact, I happen to have a little insight into that because my daughter works, she's in that, in that particular section there. And I don't see the communication between those that have already done something and those that want to do something. Now, Ren Bowman, he's up there, he wants $7 million for economic development, and the chamber's standing up and cheering. I want to know some focus. Specifically, what industry do you see developing and exporting? And I guess that's, I think the thing is too broad. Hell, the idea's great. Okay, where's the market? What specific products? Give me the name of some companies that are ready to fire up so that we just don't spend a lot of money on tire-kicking expeditions. You go to the Far East, you better be ready to close a deal. Hey, they'll drink sake with you and bow and exchange gifts. But one thing that I learned, you know, from my contacts, could make a deal. Like, they went over and they made a deal on Taiwanese coal. It was small. So I'd like to know something that we're focused on. I know what they've done in the past, and I'm not going to argue whether it's good or bad. But I just hate, and God, you know, I'm not a pessimist. I hate to see false hope phrases. I'd like to see specifically, and maybe I just don't know enough about it, some specifics.
Red, an example is that Sealy in Wrangell.
The what?
Sealy in Wrangell, Sealy Wood Products. And he is looking at a sawmill that would be value added, has the market, but successful in exporting to the Orient, and I would anticipate that when this bill passes that Sealy will be coming in with a project to build a mill that meets the requirements of the Japanese market that he's already been dealing with. It will provide a number of jobs in Wrangell. And I haven't talked to Steve about it, but I know that when I said that I haven't had an opportunity to speak to people on a specific basis, but I just haven't. But I know that Sealy's out there. I don't know, you may have
talked to us.
But they have talked to Senator Jones. But there are other similar situations.
I'd like to see him before this committee. I'd like to see their deal that they've got, you know. That would be the thing that motivated me when somebody comes in and says, well, we've got this, we've got that, and this is what we need to go.
Right now, Red, one of the problems, and I've talked to Ron Bolsey, for instance, and Rainier, one of the real problems you have is that with these projects, you need a secondary source of capital. And you cannot get a secondary source of capital to pick up 20%, 90%, or 70% of a loan that would be made by Alaska State Bank, Rainier Bank, Alaska, or any of these banks, for a project like Sealy's sawmill. It's just not there. The bankers that I've talked to would make those loans if they had a secondary market to lay off of, to participate in the loan and to lay off a portion of the risk. But there is no presently market for that kind of participation. And without it, you're not going to have the economic activity. One of the reasons why the bottom fish industry is concentrated in Seattle rather than in Alaska is there is no source of capital in Alaska. And I've talked to Bosey, I've talked to Whitmore at Alaska State Bank, and they're flat isn't. And that's one of our major export industries in this state. And the fish are caught in our water, and the value-added aspect of that industry isn't here. They're building, right now there are 7 new catcher processors on the drawing boards to stay on the high seas. They'll leave Ballard, they'll go up in our water, catch the fish, process the fish, and go back to Ballard. And we don't have Alaskans are trying to compete with these people. We don't have a source of capital. We can't go. Our people can't go in and build a plant that will compete with those. And they're going to continue to build until there's an alternative in Alaska, because we're on Cliff would know it as probably better than I do at Kodiak. I mean, if we're going to in fact create a situation where we can have, where we'll have shore-based fish plants, where we can have value-added industries in the state, there's going to have to be a source of capital. And if we were competing with the banks, they wouldn't be supportive of this. But every banker I've talked to said, "Well, we need it." In many cases, based on their lending limits, they cannot. A bank like Alaska State Bank cannot make a loan without a secondary or participating bank or institution with them. They don't have. They aren't large enough. They don't have the ability under the FDIC rules and regulations to make those kinds of loans. And if Ada doesn't do it, it's just not going to happen.
It's just my intent, but it's pretty clear that this has been amended 6 times in the Senate. We have 6 different versions before us. We just got this last week. I'm going to appoint a subcommittee to deal with this issue. I know Representative Ellis and Representative Copeland have a special pest committee meeting scheduled for this afternoon. Representative Davidson, did you have a comment or a question?
Yeah, I would like to add that, sometimes get carried away with wanting to have the big picture before we're willing to go through the steps to put the little pieces that make up the big picture. And I think here with the efforts of the administration and the International Business Center and other programs, this vehicle here, I think that we are in fact working on the little pieces. And the experience that the commission has just told you about in the fishing industry is absolutely correct. And until we're prepared to do the little pieces to get to the big picture, then we're not going to be sending fish down the Alaska Highway to Chicago or competing with the international middlemen, if you will, for even our domestic markets. So until we can, again, get to the focus and get specific with the pieces that we need to put together the opportunities that are certainly available to us with our capital abilities, with our resource presence. We lack the training, the knowledge of marketing, and the capability of value-added opportunity. And it's within our possibilities, within our potential, we can reach out and do that. And this is one of these areas where it's a small piece and it fits into a larger picture. That's my comment.
Okay. Did you have a...
No.
Yeah, I did, and you just said, I know John Trude Kim well. I'm going to ask him about this, how it fits in. Are these indeed fitting? Show me the overall plan. Hey, I don't have any objection.
You ask about, well, how does, you know...
Don't discount CFAB before.
Right.
CFAB.
What?
Yeah. Well, CFAB's got CFAB has a place in this too. Representative Badger, the Trade Alaska program, which the governor has announced, mm-hmm. as one of the key ingredients in that whole program, is ADA, as it came out of the Senate, 64. We're talking about the Trade Alaska program. The governor is chairman of the board of directors of 16 people, a working committee that includes the Office of International Trade, myself, Chief of Staff, DCRA, then there is an executive committee of the private sector board, which I chair as chair of the executive committee, and that goes down into Trade Alaska, which has your trade envoys, ADA, the John Kim Center for International Business. And all of that has been put together, but you need all the pieces. We don't have, as I said, I'm the fishing industry. You got Sealy sitting over there that's putting out a great product. He has the same problem, it's our. And then you have in the export area, you have the problem that very often when you export a product overseas, there's a real hiatus before you get paid with a letter of credit. That is taken care of by this statute, and it's all part of the whole.
Well, I'm going to appoint a subcommittee of Representatives Kopanen, Boucher, and I'd be happy to have you serve on there too, Cliff.
Are you an educator?
Are you? Do you think Kurt or yourself would be?
Kurt has some interest.
Kurt expressed some interest. Okay. Well, then we'll have Representative Menard on there too, if he so wishes. And we'll coordinate with my staff on a time, and the request has been expressed that we put that on the record, the subcommittee activity, and we're happy to do that. Representative Boucher?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I would like is how all the pieces fit together. Now, there's no doubt that it requires this, so somebody can sit down and just simply, I don't care about the section such and such and section such and such. I want to know, do we have a deal? Like, hey, if you can show me that it's about somebody to build a fish plant and process it in Kodiak, I'll be pushing right behind you. But if it's some generalized BS that is just going to raise people's hopes again in the name of economic development, I'm not going to join the team.
I would like to keep the meeting going and talk about the proposed committee legislation here. Representative Furness has a piece of legislation I do. I know Representative Kopanen and Ellis have to leave, but I would ask you to take a look at the two proposals for committee legislation. You've already seen Walt's before, and mine is on the gaming revision. And you just take a copy with you and take a look at them. We'll bring them up at the next meeting.
I just think that
The meeting's not adjourned yet. I want to talk about Walt's legislation while we put it off. We run out of time every day.
Oh God!
We want to stay to it. Okay. I know. We will expedite this subcommittee.
We'll do it in the committee.
How's that?
For you, I would do it.
Put them on the record and everything else.
Yeah, but I don't want to face it.
Well, I suggest let's put this.
I just want to make sure that it's not a lot of.
No, I want
to. Well, let me get his attention. Sorry. I kept trying to. They've got a special
meeting. Who's out there? We've been assured that this bill is aimed at.
If it's going to put 10 people to work in Kodiak, and I can see it tomorrow, I won't ask him
about it. The change in the definition, it's all inclusive. We'll have to.
Anybody's license is a health care provider.
You've got to have a program.
We're talking about
people to come to you.
Oh, we got four. Yeah, that's what I was going to try to keep doing here. Keep going.
You're a bureaucrat now, Tony.
Oh, come.
Are there any licensed
health care providers
besides Teacher Cast right now that are getting third party reimbursement?
Only those that may have been dropped, that may have been included since the statute update. I think the last one was MedWise.
What would like to
say? Yeah, we haven't licensed MedWise yet.
I thought we did, though.
No,